Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. What's happening? It is Milk the Clock, episode 31, first episode of 2015. I am the one, the only Ryan Music, and joined always by my best friend and co-host, Michael Cody Stevenson. What is happening?
One word to describe my feeling right now. And it's awkward. I just shaved my beard that I've had for 2 months, the longest of my career. But I could honestly say I feel 10 times sexier, 20 years younger.
No way. The baby face Stevenson is back?
Yeah, man. It's like, I don't even know. I forgot how sexy I was. When I looked in the mirror, I was stunned.
Wow. I mean, I hope you got, like, some protection on you to start beating off all the ladies when you're out and hitting the town at night.
Nah, man. I'm all for that.
All right. Well, you know, hopefully you can take me under your wing and show me the ropes.
You know it. You're the number one wingman out there. But here we go. First layup line. I'm shooting it at you. Pau Gasol last night went for 46-18 against the Milwaukee Bucks. He was the first Chicago Bull to have a 40-plus and 15-plus rebound game since MJ did it in 1990 when he went for 69-18. Pau Gasol, last time he averaged a double-double was the 2011-2012 season, so it's been a while. Right now he's averaging 18-11. Do you think he's going to finish this season averaging a double-double for the Chicago Bulls?
I absolutely do. He's averaging almost 19, 18-7, so, and I just, he would really have to have a down second half of the year for his numbers to drop off that much. I mean, granted, double-double, he's only averaging 11 rebounds, so he's kind of flirting with danger on the side of the rebounds, but I would imagine that he'll be able to continue to average at least 10 a night or so for the remainder of the season. He's playing great ball. I mean, this is just looking like the best pickup of the offseason right now, and I definitely think he's going to be averaging a double-double at the end of this season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. That Chicago Bulls team is very good when you, you know, add Jimmy Butler's really coming out party this year and Joakim Noah, the defensive player of the year last year. That team is overall built to make a long run in the playoffs. But I'll speak for all Laker fans right now. How hard was it to watch that 46-18 game? Because that Pau Gasol, where was he the last 2 years on the Los Angeles Lakers? You should probably ask D'Antoni that question. A little bit could go on Pau Gasol's side as well. I think he was playing uninspired basketball in L.A. While all that stuff went down, the Dwight Howard trade and all that. It's really hard for Laker fans to swallow that. But this guy, I think, you know, the Lakers wasted 2 years of this guy's prime, and you're seeing how dominant he can really be on a competitive basketball team.
Definitely agree with that. It's pretty unfortunate and would love to see Pau Gasol still on the Lakers. Next layup line, going back to, dude, come on, Oliver and Hudson, really? They really got to give their 2 cents. They got to give their 2 cents on that one.
Oliver's not happy about Pau Gasol playing on the Bulls, I can tell you that.
Well, yeah, I can't blame them. So, all right, next layup line, we'll go back to some news from earlier in the week. Major League Baseball announced this year's inductees for the Hall of Fame. You got the big unit, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Craig Biggio, and John Smoltz, all inducted into this year's Hall of Fame. And then there were some notable people who didn't quite make it, but they did receive more votes than they had in the past. What were your takeaways from this year's Hall of Fame ballot results?
Well, every single year it's actually a disappointment because it turns out to be about who didn't get in as opposed to who got in. All these guys are deserving, in my opinion. Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez, two of the most dominant pitchers I ever seen pitch personally. And Biggio, great player, didn't get in last year. Smoltz, people do say maybe he's not a first ballot. Well, he got in. But the thing I took out of it was Mike Piazza, his percentage went up 7.7 percentage points. So next year, when Ken Griffey Jr. gets in, there's a good possibility Mike Piazza is going to get in. And he's a guy with the suspicion hanging over him. And that could open the floodgates for a lot of these guys with a dark cloud over them because of the steroid era. And who knows what's going to happen after that. It could get really interesting next year if Mike Piazza gets in.
Yeah, definitely. And next year's ballot, looking ahead, as you said, it's going to be really interesting to see what's going to happen with some of those steroid era players. My biggest thing, and I'm going to kind of piggyback off of what I heard on Jay Moore Sports when he interviewed Luis Gonzalez the day of the results of the Hall of Fame, and they talked about the voting process and some of the changes that they would like to see. And I completely agree with what they were talking about. And they were saying that it needs to be more of a hybrid process of not just the Baseball Writers of America, but the baseball writers along with players in the Hall of Fame. Because I think that that would be pretty cool to see players who have already been honored as being a part of that elite group of being in the Hall of Fame and what their opinions would be on allowing other players that they either played against or perhaps watched played and who they would be willing to accept into their fraternity of the greatest who have ever played the game. So I would like for there to maybe be a change in the voting process. Now, I know that probably wouldn't be the most perfect solution, given that you can't rely on former Hall of Famers to be as tuned in with current players, so you can't really guarantee that they're going to know who exactly might be the most deserving to get in, but I just think it would be an interesting element to incorporate into the voting process.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm an aspiring baseball, you know, writer myself, and there's a problem when Pedro Martinez didn't get 9% of the votes out there. I don't know what it is, and, you know, maybe they should have players in the hall actually vote, but then again, you could go back on that and say there might be some bias there with old school and new school baseball players because there's a bunch of new stats implemented. So, you know, there's always going to be a debate about the Hall of Fame. That's why I love it, but when we're talking about steroids, it can get in a really dark and ugly discussion. But let's move on to the next layup line. I love this one. We have a segment called Bucky's Bills, but the Bills just hired Rex Badass Ryan to be their head coach. And you can already tell my initial thoughts. What are your thoughts on this hire?
I thought it was a great hire for the Buffalo Bills. Now, me personally, maybe people who are like NFL insiders could have saw this coming. But when Doug Marrone all of a sudden resigned from his position at the Bills, I was shocked about that for one thing. And then for another, to find out that Rex Ryan is going to be eventually signed by the Bills, I thought it was an absolutely great hire. As you mentioned earlier, we normally have a Bucky's Bills segment, not this week. Bucky's down in San Diego. He's a little busy. But he has come out and said, we were talking about this earlier, he doesn't agree with it because he doesn't think Rex Ryan's a good coach, or I'm not even sure his exact reasoning, but Rex Ryan is known as a defensive coach, and the Bills have one of the best defenses in the NFL this year. They were for sure a top five defense. Now, I would have liked to have maybe seen the Bills hire a more offensive-minded person, but I don't know if, since Jim Harbaugh decided to go back to Michigan, I couldn't see a better coaching candidate out on the market right now. They might need help on the offensive side of the ball, but the Bills went out and got the best coach out on the market right now, so you have to be happy with that.
I absolutely love this hire. Rex Ryan's always been a rah-rah FU guy, and he probably went to the Bills interview and said, heck yes, I'm taking this job because I get to play the New York Jets twice a year. And if you go on Twitter and look at known Patriots fans, Bill Simmons, one of them, in his podcast said if he was extremely happy when the Jets decided to fire Rex Ryan because he gives Bill Belichick and Tom Brady a headache that they don't really get with any other coach they go against. And I love it. This guy knows the division inside and out. And people are going to think about the last 2 years for the New York Jets. Yeah, they were horrible. But this guy came in 2009 and 2010, took a rookie quarterback in Mark Sanchez to an AFC championship game in back-to-back years. Yeah, he made his predictions. I love this. He put the New York Jets back on the map. They might be down right now, but that was, I don't think Jets fans would trade anything for those two great years he had in New York. And he's the first coach since 1997 to actually stay in the same division after coaching the team in that division the year before, since Bill Parcells, when he went from the Patriots to the Jets. So I love this move. I'm a huge Rex Ryan fan, clearly.
Yeah, definitely. In the past, if you would have said, are you going to be tuning in to a Jets-Bills game, most likely, depending on what else was on TV, I probably would have said no. But next season, if everything goes according to plan, you better guarantee that I'm probably going to be watching that game. Last layup line. So pretty interesting story has come out. LeBron James is sponsored by Beats by Dre headphones, and Ohio State players were just granted all a pair of headphones, the Beats by Dre, and LeBron James didn't directly purchase the headphones and give them to the players, but he arranged for contacts, quote-unquote, wink-wink, in order for Ohio State to receive the headphones. And LeBron James from Ohio, known to be a big Ohio State fan. How is this not an NCAA violation?
Yeah, you look in the years past, and basically, you know, every little thing is an NCAA violation. You'd probably hear a lot more uproar from me if it was an NCAA violation because, you know, that's what the NCAA's become, you know, this type of police. They're trying to police every little thing that's happening. In this case, you know, maybe they're not going at it because it's LeBron James. You know, he's such a big icon. He is an Ohio State fan. And if you want to, you know, look deep into it, if I'm a kid in high school right now, and LeBron's put it out there that he's an Ohio State fan. I mean, he wears their colors, goes to their games, and obviously, you know, gives them Dre Beat headphones. If I'm a kid in high school and Ohio State's looking to, you know, sign me and recruit me, I'm saying, heck yeah, I get to meet LeBron James and free Dre Beat headphones. Yeah, maybe the NCAA should have looked into it. But I'm kind of glad they didn't do anything about it because just last week they actually made a right decision for the first time ever and are finding a way to get players' family members to the Final Four in women's and men's college basketball and the college football playoffs. So you got to give them credit there. I'm glad they're kind of taking their foot off the pedal, and that could mean something. I think the NCAA knows their time might be ending pretty soon here.
Ooh, that almost sounded like a halftime reach, but I like it. I completely agree with what you were saying about being able to make something happen for players' families to be able to attend the college football playoffs and now the national championship game. I think that's great. And just to kind of quote this article that I have here from ESPN about this whole thing, I mean, it's so weird how all of this breaks down just in terms of, you know, the letter of the law. And it goes, schools are allowed to give their players gifts worth $400 for the national championship game. Winning the national championship game, they can now give their team an additional $415 in gifts. The value of the Beats by Dre headphones will be deducted. Also, the gifts are normally counted as wholesale, not retail. So therefore, when the headphones, which are normally about $300, only actually cost about $175 for wholesale. Also, Oregon received headphones as a part of being in the Pac-12 championship game last month. Pretty much, what does that mean? I don't have a single idea. Because as you said, it seems like everything is an NCAA violation at some point, but in other terms, it's not. So I don't even know what this means or where we're going with this. So why don't we just, that's it for layup lines. Who even knows if that's a violation or not? Clearly it's not. They've said that it's not. But let's get started with this college football playoffs. Last week you had Ohio State pulling what I thought was one of the more shocking upsets. They took down Alabama 42-35. You had Oregon, which just laid a beat down on Florida State 59-20. I mean, it almost seemed like that Oregon-Florida State game, as weird as it sounds, it couldn't have gone either way, but there were a few key plays that totally changed the course of that game. Florida State was able to get some points on the board right before halftime. They come out, they're driving the field, they have momentum, and then Dalvin Cook, the running back, fumbles the ball. If I don't know if it was exactly quite in the red zone, but they were definitely threatening to score, and they were driving the field. And at that point, Oregon just had all the momentum. And then I'm sure by now you've seen the memes or the pictures or the videos of Jameis Winston trying to scramble out of the pocket and fumbling the ball as he's falling backwards, and that game just got ugly really fast. But the Ohio State-Alabama game was absolutely awesome. I mean, what a story for Urban Meyer to turn around that Ohio State program and to take down the SEC powerhouse. I think it's the first time since, like, 2005, if I remember correctly, that there's not an SEC team in the championship. So I think that's great. And another interesting fact is there's early reports that this is going to be they've seen the most money ever bet on a college football game is this next national championship game. So I'm pretty fired up to see Ohio State go head-to-head with Oregon tomorrow night.
Yeah, you mentioned this is probably going to be the highest. You mentioned that so much money is being put onto this college football game. It's probably going to be the most watched college football game, no doubt about it, ever, because it is the first true national championship game. I can't believe it was Ohio State versus Oregon. I think they said only three coaches pulled out of all the coaches at the beginning of the season actually pulled these two teams, meaning the national championship. I'm really up in the air with this one because I thought Alabama was going to run Ohio State straight out of the stadium, and Ohio State third-string quarterback Cardale Jones has a heck of a game and wins that one. And if you match these two teams up, and as good as these offenses are, it's going to come down to the defenses. It's going to come down to who makes more stops and who could create that costly turnover. And right now, Oregon's lost a lot of players. There was a lot said about their DB, who they lost before the semifinal game against Florida State. And now they lose their wide receiver, Carrington, who is, outside of Marcus Mariota, the player of that game against Florida State. He was suspended, didn't even make the trip to this national championship game. So Oregon's without one of their best weapons. And Cardale Jones, this is interesting right here, because he's actually draft eligible after this game. And if you're Cardale Jones and you got JT Barrett coming back next year, who had one of the greatest seasons.
And Braxton Miller. He's supposed to be coming back too.
Braxton Miller is supposedly transferring, maybe to Florida State, I hear. JT Barrett probably will come back and start because he had one of the best years in Big Ten football history this year. So Cardale Jones, I mean, that's like, that really is a good thing to talk about. He's actually an NFL prospect. And right now, I mean, small sample size, two games, but he won a Big Ten championship, you know, knocked the doors off against Wisconsin, blowing them out, and then beating an Alabama Nick Saban defense. That's something to show for. And if he can beat Oregon in the national championship game with the stakes as high as they are, that's going to be crazy. And I want to know if an NFL team will actually take on this kid who is literally looks like a defensive lineman out there playing quarterback.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, another thing to be looking out for, Ohio State kind of drew some attention on media day because one of their star young wide receivers, Devin Smith, was not there. Urban Meyer said that they let him stay home because he has been sick. Now, whether he's been able to make a quick recovery, I'm not sure. I haven't done enough research to know exactly what the extent of his illness is, but that was just yesterday, and now the game is tomorrow. So that's another thing to look out for, is Ohio State might also be, if he plays, I mean, chances are he's probably not going to be 100%. And the initial line for this game opened up as Oregon as the 7-point favorite, and after Carrington went down, that line now went down to Oregon as a 5.5-point favorite. So this is obviously going to be an insane game to watch. Probably half of America, if not more, is going to be watching, and I just couldn't be more excited about it.
Right before our halftime reach, because I think that's when we're going to let everyone know our predictions. But I want to have an over-under right here for Ezekiel Elliott, who's been going absolutely bonkers the last couple of games at running back for Ohio State. I'm setting his over-under at 220. What are you going to do?
I'll take the under. But I take the under saying that I think he's for sure going over 150. I'm saying he's going to flirt with 200, maybe not quite break 200.
I'm saying over 220, so that's something to look forward to. But now we have the halftime reach, and I'll start with mine with my prediction at the end. My halftime reach, kind of shady. I'm going against the Heisman Trophy winner, Marcus Mariota. He's going to throw 3 interceptions in this national championship game. Although the game's still going to be close, and Ohio State wins 38-31.
Ooh. All right. Ohio State is going to be winning the game because they are going to score to take the lead over Oregon 28-24. However, Oregon will immediately return the kickoff to take a 31-28 victory in the first ever true college football championship game.
Man, would that be something? We're hoping for a great game tomorrow. We know everyone's going to be tuning in. Man, I'm so excited. But let's talk about the more exciting stuff that went down today and yesterday, and that's the NFL divisional round playoffs. You had the Patriots beating the Ravens in what I thought was the best game of the entire weekend. Those two teams were trading touchdowns. It was 14-0 at one point. The Pats came back. It was 28-14 Ravens. Pats came back. Patriots ended up winning that game. It was something else. I mean, blood pressures were raising. It was unbelievable. Tom Brady came up big when he needed to. Gronkowski, again, was probably the key factor in that game. Those two teams know each other well, and the Patriots came out on top. So they'll be headed to the AFC Championship game against, kind of a shocker here, the Indianapolis Colts. Andrew Luck went into Denver, Peyton Manning's house, and beat him 21-13, which I hope is not Peyton Manning's last game, because that's not a way I want to see Peyton go out. Denver fans were booing. There were a lot of three and outs. It was not the Denver offense and Peyton Manning you've seen all year. Now, the NFC side, you had the Seattle Seahawks, and what was kind of a close game up until Cam Chancellor, the beast of all beasts, having a pick six against Cam Newton. Seahawks ran away with that game over the Panthers. They'll be headed to the NFC Championship against the Green Bay Packers. And here's where it gets controversial. The Packers at Lambeau ended up beating the Dallas Cowboys 26-21. But what was a reverse call on Dez Bryant's catch at the one-yard line is going to have everyone in an uproar today, tomorrow, probably the rest of the week. People are calling it karma. If you're a Dallas Cowboys fan and didn't believe in karma, you believe in it now, because Dez Bryant caught a pass, landed at the one-yard line. When he had the ball in his left hand, hit the ground, ball popped out. It was ruled a catch on the field. They went, reviewed it. Call was reversed, no catch. I don't know the rule, word for word, but you could show that catch, that highlight, to anyone on the street, not a football fan, and they're going to say that's a catch. What do you think? I mean, I feel bad for Dez Bryant. That is a catch in my mind.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you in the sense that it seems like that's a rule that needs to be changed. Now, again, from Twitter, Dean Blandino, head of officials for the NFL, he tweeted out saying, Bryant going to the ground, by rule, he must hold on to the ball, or it says it, but the ball, throughout the entire process of contacting the ground. He did not, so it is incomplete. Now, the other full wording of the rule, I'm not exactly sure, but I agree with you in the sense that the rule needs to be changed in order for people to understand that he went up, grabbed that ball with two hands, came down with his feet in bounds, and then as he's continuing to fall to the ground, he is lunging forward to get extra yardage. His left hand hits his left elbow hits the ground, and then as the ball goes down and contacts the ground, it wiggles loose a little bit. Therefore, he didn't fully hold on to the ball. But I pretty much think that you said it perfectly in the sense that if you show that video to even a fair-weather football fan and you go, hey, does it look like this guy caught the ball? I mean, it seems like 99,000 people out of 100,000 would have to say that he for sure caught that ball. I mean, it's just, it's insane to me. But based off of precedent, too, because this goes back to Calvin Johnson in a very similar situation, they made the same ruling. So clearly, at least they're being consistent in the application of the rule. I just think you and I both agree that it seems like this rule needs to be changed.
There's no doubt about it. And I mentioned karma because I'm sure everyone's heard of it by now. You go back to last week when the Cowboys were in the wild card round against the Lions. There was a pass interference call and the flag got picked up. You know, the picked up flag heard around the world. And with pass interference, no one really even knows what that call is anymore. You know, what holding pass interference is. I mean, the referee straight up picked up the flag. And Dean Blandino came out the next day and said that was a flag. And now a catch, when did we not know what a catch was? Everyone thought this was a catch, and now we're actually debating if something's a catch or not. It's when you catch it with two hands, bring it to your chest, and go to the ground. You know, now it's, you know, it's up in the air of what is and what is not a catch, and I think that's a really sketchy situation for the NFL, and the rule needs to be changed this offseason. Poor Cowboys. Packers are in the NFC Championship against the Seahawks, who they got absolutely boat raced by in the first game of this season. That's going to be a great rematch. These games this weekend were the greatest. Now, the biggest shocker to me was, without a doubt, Andrew Luck beating Peyton Manning in Denver. That was unbelievable. I mean, the Broncos were an offense that averaged the second most points in the NFL this season, in the regular season. And a Colts defense that, you know, it's not something to go home and tell your mom about. This team was 19th in the league, giving up 23 points a game, and they allowed 13 to Peyton Manning. Was it not the same Peyton Manning? The Colts defense was unbelievable. Those DBs played a heck of a game, and it was kind of sad to have that Colts defense. Great, great game plan by them. They basically said, we know Peyton Manning can't throw the ball deep like he used to, so why don't you throw it deep against us? And they shut him down, which was the biggest shocker to me this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, pretty crazy to see how the Broncos have been broken down in the playoffs. I mean, last year in the Super Bowl, and I mean, that game just got out of control so quickly. I mean, in terms of that Seattle defense was so good. And they were able to put points on the board early by making big plays, which then forced the Broncos to throw on every down, and they became extremely predictable. So that game was a little bit more understandable. This game, I mean, for the Broncos to come in to this season by adding to their defense, by getting DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib, so your question marks about their defense were gone, and from what you saw in the regular season, they had one of the best offenses in the NFL here. And for that game to come out with that result and their defense to play as about as well as you could expect against one of the other best offenses in the league and Andrew Luck and the Colts, and for the Broncos offense to just get completely shut down after they had a first round bye. So Peyton had rest and expected at all. I didn't see it coming whatsoever. And I thought without a doubt we would be looking at another Tom Brady, Peyton Manning shootout in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, and it's really a shame. I mean, you talked about that defense. They really revamped it in the offseason, but they couldn't even get a hand on Andrew Luck. And it was really a game dominated by the offensive line of the Indianapolis Colts. So it was Peyton Manning's ninth first-round exit for him in the playoffs. He went to 11-13 career in the postseason. Very disappointing. I hope it's not the last we see of him. We'll probably get into that later in a later podcast this week. But, man, I think it's time to hand you the football. Stevenson drops back in the pocket, scrambles to the left, bites off one tackler, scrambles to the right, flips it to Music on a flat route. Music's got it.
You know, earlier this week, I read a story about Tiger Woods announced that one of the tournaments he's going to be playing in this year is going to be down at Torrey Pines in San Diego. My dad, who's also a big sports fan and loves Tiger Woods, started talking to me about it, and he said, you know what, I think it'd be pretty cool if we go down to San Diego and we're able to see Tiger Woods, you know, actually play. I mean, I'm sure Tiger Woods will continue to be a professional golfer for some time here, but to actually have the opportunity to go down to a major tournament and see Tiger compete in what could still possibly be considered potentially in his prime, I mean, I know that's looking a little bit far ahead. Who knows how his health's going to be and if his back's going to hold up and what have you and how good he's actually going to be in the tournament. I mean, who knows? He might not even make it through the tournament considering he's pulled out of tournaments early before or he hasn't made the cut. But I would be absolutely fired up for that opportunity. So hopefully my dad and I are able to make some plans to go down to Torrey Pines and watch the late, great Tiger Woods tear it up on the golf course one more time again.
That'd be something else. That's what it's all about these days. You would get to see one of the most dominating athletes we've ever seen at his or her sport. I would love to see Tiger as well. Hopefully he could squeeze me into that trip. But anyways, that's all we got for episode 31 of Milk the Clock Podcast. You can always hit us up on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at MCSGotcha. That's MCSGOTCHA. Music, send us home.
All right, and Cody, you know, I'll talk to Big Keith and see what we can do about getting you on that San Diego trip. But as you said, hit me up on Twitter, at Music Reports. That's MUSICK Reports. We will see you later this week, everybody. Milk it.